so much to say. But if you know me well, you'd understand the way I do. Evie must be a better way to say the things I feel, the love I only know with you. But I don't know what it is that makes me feel the way I do. Ooh, Evie, I'm nothing without you. The sun is shining down. My eyes are open now. I see so much I never knew. Evie, I wanna thank you now. Giving me this child, so much a part of me and you. Ooh, I don't know what it is that makes me feel the way I do. Oh, 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 Evie. Much in love with you.
As Hope you're enjoying Dirt Music on 2SER this Saturday afternoon. Regular listeners to the show may have noticed no producer Susan again this week, but she will. She promises that she will be back next week. You may have heard her this morning doing Pretzel Logic on 2SER, but she said, I need another week off from Dirt Music. So fingers crossed for next weekend. Okay, we listened to Muriel Grossman doing Calm, and then we followed that with a classic, Stevie Wright doing Evie parts 1, 2, and 3 from his Hard Rock album. Played that because it's great, and also, as you will hear, it is considered the greatest, best Australian song of all time by writer, journalist, author Debbie Kruger, who in 2005 published a terrific book called Songwriters Speak, all about Australian songwriters in depth. Fascinating conversations with Australian songwriters. The book's available again. You'll hear how you can get a copy soon. But last week, I had a chat with Debbie Kruger, not just about Songwriters Speak, but about songwriting in general. Here's the first part of that conversation. Debbie Kruger, thank you so much for joining me this week on Dirt Music.
Thank you, Stuart. And as Siri would say, Stuart Coupe.
Coupe, yes, or Calp. Calp. Now, Songwriters Speak, it's back in print after almost 20 years. You must have been both delighted that it is and frustrated that it wasn't.
Yeah, it was a very sad story, which I'll keep very brief. It had been published. It had great reviews and great attention, and it was doing what a book of this kind would do. It was selling bit by bit over time, and after a couple of years, the original publisher, for completely unrelated reasons, decided to fold their business and gave me the rights back and sold the remainder, the remaining copies, which was only about 500, to Music Sales, Norm Lurie, who shared the same distributor, Macmillan, who accidentally pulped those 500 books. And no other publisher then wanted to republish it over the years, because there's this thing that you don't republish a book that another publisher originally published, which might make no sense to you and me, but that was the reality. So it was up to me to figure out a way to get it back out there, and technology being as it is today, you can do print to order and it can still be great quality. And it can be available everywhere in the world on Amazon and other online retailers. And that's what I've done this year.
And it's an important book, I mean, which is obviously part of the frustration, because it does document, you know, an incredibly diverse array of Australian songwriters with a great degree of insight and information. I mean, what was your thinking at the time? Was it to explore that? Was it because there wasn't such a beast? What was the thinking?
All of that. So I read a book that kind of changed my life, because I'd been an interviewer for many years like you, and you probably know the book or even might have it on your bookshelves, Songwriters on Songwriting by the American writer Paul Zollo. And I just thought, wow, this is real interviewing. This is in-depth interviewing, and I feel like I'm in the room with them, and I'm hanging on for the next question and answer. And then I met Paul and we became friends, and I said to him, I'm thinking of doing an Australian New Zealand version of this. And he said, well, you would have my blessing. And then I went to work for APRA as their head of communications. And I started interviewing for the APRAP journal at the time, Andrew Farris and Paul Kelly. And I would say to them, if I were to do a book like this, would you participate? And they said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of, it all came together. I was responsible, or part of the team responsible, for that 10 best Australian songs of that past 75 years that APRA put together in 2001 to celebrate its 75th anniversary. And so there was Don Walker, and there was Harry Vander, and there were the guys from Midnight Oil, and they were all there with me. And it just all came together. And I honestly, I felt I had to do it because I didn't want anyone else to. I didn't believe anyone else would do as good a job as I would. I didn't believe anyone else would do as good a job as I would, and I wanted to do it before anyone else was mm-hmm. able. And then, as I said at the time when people were interviewing me, I don't think anyone else would have, because it was huge task?
Well, it's a massive book to start with.
It is.
I'm guessing that with every individual subject you spent 4 or 5 hours talking to them.
Some longer. Billy Thorpe went on and on and on. A lot of it was not really worth printing.
Yeah.
And a lot, the average was usually probably 3 hours. Like I had 3 hours with Nick Cave, which back in 2004 was a lot of time with Nick. And I travelled long distances. I wanted to do them all pretty much face to face. The shortest would have been an hour. Chrissy Amphlett, Daniel Johns, they were like 1 hour, but I got a lot out of those hours. But yeah, I wanted detailed conversations. Some of them were done over two lengthy sessions, like Tim Finn, 3 hours in Sydney, or 2.5 hours in Sydney, 3 hours in Auckland. So it needed to be done in a lot of detail and then whittled back to something readable rather than, you know, one publisher wanted to publish 12 narrative-style interviews. And you can build a narrative out of a very brief phoner. That's not what I wanted. I wanted to present conversations that you might read and feel like you were in the room with us.
And did anyone say no, or were there any reluctant, yes, I don't want to talk about my creativity, it's my world and you would not understand and I don't want to articulate it?
Nobody said that.
Right.
But there were no's, and the two big ones were Greg McCanish, who wanted to be paid.
Right.
You're going to make money out of this book, aren't you? I said, if I'm lucky, I might break even. Well, I'm not going to do it unless I'm paid.
Greg McCanish has never written a book in Australia. He would know you don't make money from doing it.
So, well, but he was, I think he'd become a lawyer.
Yes,
so anyway, I just said, well, then, Greg, I'm really sorry you won't be in my book. I wanted Angus and Malcolm Young so badly, not because I'm a fan of AC/DC, but because they are probably amongst Australia's greatest songwriting exports in terms of their commerciality. And I thought it was very important to have them. And I was blocked at every avenue. And yet mutual friends of Malcolm would say to me, he would love to be included. He would love that respect. But his people wouldn't let me get to them, even though I did Vander and Young. I wanted Barry Gibb really badly. He's my mecca of interviews, but Morris had just died. And so Barry's personal manager was very understanding. We spoke on the phone. We emailed frequently. I sent the book later. But he just wouldn't. He was protecting Barry at the time.
What did you learn?
What did I learn?
Yeah.
I learnt that everybody is human. Everybody is... there was nobody, well, except maybe Billy Thorpe, which I can say because he's long gone, who would sit there and arrogantly proclaim to be brilliant and great at what they do. Everyone is self-conscious and unsure and very human and flawed and ultimately doing it because it's what they love. And it's that love that, you know, was what took me to sit down with them. And because I had really done my homework, there was a lot of respect from just about all of them. So I learned, obviously, that there are many beliefs about where songs come from, that there are many ways to write a song. But most of all, I learned that my passion and love for songs is valid.
And did you develop a theory either pre or post the book about the nature of the Australian song? I mean, people talk about, you know, the Australian sound, and I know a couple of people in North America who say that sonically they can tell that something has been created in Australia. I don't necessarily agree with them. And then, you know, Australian songs are obviously defined by name checking of locations and places like Palm Beach Road and Baldwin Calling and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, is there a distinctive Australian approach to songwriting?
I don't believe so. I believe a lot of them, particularly the songwriters who emerged in the 60s, were so influenced by the Stones, the Kinks, the Beatles, that they saw themselves as emulating. Or you'd have someone like Brian Cadd who just wanted to be the band. You know, his epiphany was music from Big Pink. But then you would have songwriters that I personally wouldn't have gravitated towards, say John Williamson, whose poetry just moved me to tears. Mm-hmm. And it was such a privilege to study these work. Or Nick Cave, who I just saw in LA not long before I came back. And the reverence for him and the way he's worked over such a long period of time. But for me, it was so new, and you know, my interview with Nick was extracted and printed and published elsewhere because it was so unique in the way I opened it by saying, well, I come to you as a Nick Cave virgin. You know, I studied you to be able to sit here with you, but I have not been a fawning fan. Mm-hmm. And he respected that approach. It was the same with a lot of them. I hadn't been a huge Midnight Oil follower, so I studied them. And I wouldn't say, to go back to your point, that there was anything distinctly Australian outside the John Williamson, the Graham Connors, who, mm-hmm. of course, is very much of his place, tropical North Queensland. I mean, Casey Chambers was striving at the time I interviewed her to sound like she was in Nashville or you know, she wanted to be like a Lucinda Williams. And some of them, some of the greatest Australian songs, Friday on My Mind, were recorded overseas. Mm. So no, but then, you know, in retrospect, you'll look at something like Beds Are Burning or certain Australian songs, even How's That to a degree, and you'll go, well, they couldn't have been written anywhere else, mm-hmm. you know. Sense of place was always a big topic in my interview conversations, mm-hmm. for sure.
Newfangled and 2SER present the Debaser and Hijinks Alley Christmas Party at Oxford Art Factory on Thursday, December 21. Start your Christmas long weekend early with some live music as jazz improv duo Manfredo Lament join rising star Betty, along with Ewan Hart, The Slims, Body Wire, and more to be announced. Get tickets via the Debaser Instagram page to secure entry. Debaser and Hijinks Alley Christmas Party, Thursday, December 21 at Oxford Art Factory, supported by 2SER.
Victoria, play all the tricks with Treats, the 2SER feature album. The debut record from the Sydney four-piece is an under-the-radar gem that is as excellent as it is endearing and brimming with from-the-heart songwriting while offering a unique take on classic guitar pop. Treats by Victoria, the feature album this week on 2SER 107.3.
dress of mine. She's a mistress of mine. She's a mistress of mine.